freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says? No, he's not a brand.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
All right, here we go with another Brock and Salk podcast. And hello, Brock. How are you? Are you doing okay? I can tell that you were a little on edge ever since I told you that.
I figured it out now, by the way.
That you and I were not quite as close as we once were.
I figured it out.
And how you cheated on me and what you did to me and how upset I am. You know what it is?
I do know now.
I really am upset. I got to tell you.
I know you are.
It has nothing to do with doing radio with other people.
I know.
Of all the things you could have done without me,
I know.
I'm really, really bummed because I felt like this was something I introduced to you, that I encouraged you to do, that I really wanted to experience
together
through your eyes for the first time.
I know.
And unfortunately, you decided that you're just a little closer with Ben Hartsock than you are with me.
Whoa. I mean, the sky is so blue. There's just a deepness and richness to the colors.
There you are.
You just went out and saw color that you've never seen in your entire life.
There's Brock.
There was a vibrancy to color. See, colorblindness, people think the world is just black and white or gray. That's not how colorblindness is.
All right, turn it off. That's enough. People can go watch it on Brock's Twitter feed because, somehow with his new buddy, Ben Hartsock.
What? Brock, I totally missed this.
Brock put on the special colorblind glasses to see color for the first time and not only didn't include us in it. How much time did I spend?
What?
Heather and I spent so much time thinking about this, talking about it.
We had intern the chef sending emails to an Chroma, is that what it's called?
When it first came out, we were so about trying to get Brock to do this. He was super resistant.
I'm fine the way the Lord made me. I'm perfect.
Everything is great. And then, you get together with Ben Hartsock, and what do? You throw these glasses on and experience the world in a whole new way without us. I am legitimately crushed to see that.
I know. I apologize.
Ruined my vacation.
I'm sorry.
That was it. That was the only thing that ruined Mike Salk's vacation.
No,
nothing else negative.
There was lousy weather, and there was this, that, and the other. But
the golf clubs were at home, and you ruined the trip with your Enchroma glasses.
None of those things were worse than seeing how Brock has moved on.
Okay, so here's the deal. I will be back, and we will do this show, and I will bring my sunglasses.
Why do we care?
What are you talking about? You've already done it. I don't need to see you do it a second time.
I've got two pairs. So I've got.
What are you talking about? No.
I got the hipster LA sunglasses left with Enchroma.
Brock, I don't care how you look in the glasses.
No.
I care about what you're looking at through the glasses, which you've now done.
We'll reinvent it together.
Recreate this experience for you.
It's too late. Too late.
We're going to pretend like I never did it, and I'm just going to pretend like we're doing it again.
Mortally wounded.
And we'll
honestly was so upset when I saw it. Heather and I were like, I forget, we were walking or somewhere, and I was like flipping through the phone. I saw it, and I go, you son of, like, I was like legitimately mad when I saw it.
And it's Huard.
Right?
Yep.
You two-timing.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
How was it?
They're pretty cool, man.
Are you going to wear them like often?
I have. I definitely have. It is. They don't work indoors, right? So they're kind of sunglasses. I'm challenged because I have like the worst for their technology. So it is still an ongoing kind of technology for them. And there are some levels of colorblindness that it totally, right? It transforms you. Mine outside works terrific. And it has been super fun. And it just, it differentiates the colors. As I said, it's way more vibrant. But I can't say that, every day I'm wearing them, right? Like all of a sudden they're like glasses and I'm wearing them every single
day. If they were
to
able to get the technology right, do you think you would wear them all the time?
Probably.
That's so cool. I mean, honestly, as mad as I am about you cheating on me, I am able to just barely get over it because I think it is such a cool. And you're seeing color for the first time.
Yeah, you're seeing, it's somewhat hard to put into words because I'll take them off, right? And it's not like, now I'm totally gray and I don't see it. It's just, it is the...
It's wrong.
It's the depth. It's the robustness.
Yeah, it is the depth, right? It is just, you know.
But also this... greens and reds, right? I mean, correct. Like, you could never see those before. So greens and reds must look
differentiate.
Different.
Yeah, they differentiate.
Right.
You so like the grass, the lawn?
Yes. So I have areas with some like new sod. We took these trees out and put some new sod in.
Which is usually really green.
Really,
right?
Really
like
green. Right,
bright green.
Covered in nitrogen. Yes.
And before, like without the glasses, like, you know, it doesn't look that, and I'm like, whoa, that looks really bad. Like, oh my gosh, that looks like totally different color green than the grass that's dead around it, right? I mean, it just pops. Or the roof. Molly can't stand the roof on this house because the tiles are so multi, like, colored, and with the rock, it just doesn't work.
Hard, like, to get consistent tile color.
It's fine. It looks fine. And then I put these on. I'm like, whoa.
Oh, that's ugly. But,
yeah, that's a...
Now you're going to have to move.
Oh, no.
Like, now you're going to have to move just because of these glasses.
That's got a lot of color. That's not going to look too good.
Well, so, it's pretty cool. Yeah, I'm glad you were able to do it.
I'm sorry. And,
it was just one
you
of
know
the...
what? I'm sorry. Well, I'm sorry.
That's all I really
I do. I want to apologize. It's not easy. It was difficult to do. It just was spur of the moment a little bit. It was on video, and I was like, oh, screw it. I'll just...
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, I'm sorry.
When you started doing it, was there any part of you that at least thought of how mad I would be?
Big part. Big part. And I don't even know if I want to confess this.
Uh-oh.
But since we're all out there, I'm going to confess it.
Good for your soul, Brock.
I think based on how much trouble you're in, confession's probably in your best interest.
Okay.
Right now.
Well, let me confess something, okay? That had, I'd been sitting on that for like 6 weeks. I couldn't do it. I was like, this is going to hurt Salk. Like, I don't want to do this. And then when you told me you're going on vacation, I was like, okay, I think I can sneak attack this. Yeah, I think he's like out of the country, skiing. I'm being dead serious right now. I'm confessing.
I think he had sent
soul.
You the text that he was crossing the Canadian border.
Yes.
And Brock was like, okay, now's my time.
Now's the time.
It's time, Ben.
100%. No, it's not. It's not like I just did it. That
work wife is out of town. She'll never know.
I had been sitting on that. That had happened like 6 weeks ago, and I'm like, okay, when? Can
oh,
I
so
do
you
this?
Wouldn't? You didn't want to release it until
correct.
You?
You
didn't
correct.
Think I had like the internet in Canada?
You didn't know that Salk would be on a walk with his wife, flipping through his Twitter timeline. It's such a nice romantic walk.
This is not for show. This is not even for the podcast. This is not trying to be funny or entertaining.
Good, I am burying, not funny at all.
It isn't. I'm burying my total memes. sneaky part of my soul to you.
All right, Ben.
And that, yes, okay,
darling,
he's on vacation.
Get away with this.
I know we can get away with this. Yes, I think I can sneak this tweet in. And I think I may have tweeted something pretty quickly thereafter, so it wouldn't be like, boom, boom, right on the timeline.
That's fine.
And, yes.
I had a plan, Brock, and unfortunately mine was foiled. But in order to get back at you, when Justin and I were going to go down to Scottsdale, Phoenix this week, I was going to take him to sushi to our spot
where you and I first came together. I've been to Phoenix with you guys six times. I've never even seen this illustrious
location. The sushi spot where the server thought that Brock and I were a couple, and Brock and I first decided that we were going to get along and have success. I was going to do a P90X workout with Justin.
Oh my god!
Yeah, do the Brett Favre mile. Like, I was going to do it all to get back at you, but now I'm going to have to come up
with
something.
Is there nothing sacred anymore?
I ate Culver's without you last week, too.
Sorry. I'm telling you.
I had a walleye fish sandwich without you.
I sat on it for 6 weeks.
This is what a conscious uncoupling looks like.
I know. We're like Chris Martin and what's her name? Goop lady? What's
Gwyneth Paltrow?
Gwyneth Paltrow. Yes, our conscious uncoupling.
Oof, goop lady.
There we go.
Yeah, isn't that her thing? Goop?
Goop.
What's the name of her weird company? Yeah,
Goop.
I think it's Goop.
Goop.
Yeah, Goop.
Michael, I'm sorry.
All right, thank you, Brock. That's fine. Well, here's the thing. Don't worry. I'm not going to have the opportunity to do any of that down there with Justin because stupid owners, Rob Manfred and all of their arrogance and the player, they're not going to have baseball. Yeah. At least for a few extra weeks. Whether or not it gets done then, I am very much pessimistic on that. I think there's a decent chance we miss months, if not the whole year, and it's disgusting for a bunch of different reasons. I kind of lost my temper a couple of times this morning on the show, as you might expect. I really felt like it was warranted today because this is crushing. Do you know how much I love baseball and how important it is to me? But it's not just me. I mean, like, baseball and sports are so important to people in the passing of time, and especially baseball, with the seasonality of it and the hope of it and the hope springs eternal and the sign of good weather and the generations that it gets passed down, like all of those elements that make baseball special, and I could come up with 10 more, they're all meaningless to these callous, money-grubbing, greedy sons of you-know-whats that own these baseball teams and appear to have no interest in how important baseball is and how great it is, but only in how much money they can make off of it. And that, Kyle, to me, is vile.
Kyle, can you help me out here? Is Kyle there?
What do you need? What do you got?
Can you give me Trumpet Man at Peoria?
No. I
mean, yes, please.
No.
The Ric Flair looking
it's
guy.
It's just going to make me sad.
Those folks. That for a couple
it's
years
a bugle,
now.
Brock. Show some respect.
Sorry, bugle. Those, right? I mean, it was canceled a couple years ago, shut down last year, kind of in now, kind of back, and brought some crowds back. But and now, right, we've turned the corner, and now it's go time. And now you have an opportunity to take advantage and create goodwill and get all the folks in Florida and Arizona going again and get the fan bases cranked up and get people there, right, in those markets that need spring training, those vendors that need spring training, those communities that need spring training, those people that need spring training, right, that Bugle Man, who looks forward to that. And you just like, yeah, who cares? Nope. Can't agree.
So what do you
50 million apart on a rookie pool. Now, and by the way, and this is where I do need a little of your help. I know you're doing this every day. You're reading everything. You're seeing everything. Howdy as well. You and Shannon's podcast, digging into all of the details with this. I think I probably feel and sit with a lot of the majority of people out there, like, just get it done. Mm-hmm. Get it done. I'm reading the headlines, but just go get it done. I'm reading a little bit of it, but go get it done. This can't possibly be as simple as these three final hurdles to get over.
Well,
it can't possibly be that.
Well,
it is.
No, in some ways it is, in some ways it isn't. I think both answers are correct, honestly. Is that what they're down to? Yeah. I think the players have moved so far to get there that they can't move anymore. And that's sort of what they're feeling like. The owners have essentially just said, we want more and more and more. And I could go through numbers for days on all of this. There's some really interesting stats about how the players in baseball, as much as they're the ones without a cap and the strong union, they're actually getting the lowest percentage of the total revenue of their
especially
sport
the young players.
Of any
not
of the
close.
Major.
Total, just on the whole.
Yeah, the baseball owners have actually done a pretty good job of not giving up any of the money and then complaining that their franchises don't go up in value enough and that they can't make enough. It's really embarrassing when you think about it. The owners really are just, they're showing themselves to be so despicable throughout this process. But the players are not absolved of guilt, and I get a little nervous saying both sides are at fault because one side is more at fault than the other. Can I be clear about that and still talk about what I don't like about the players? The owners are more at fault. Like 75-80-90% of this is on the owners. And I am not convinced, Brock, that they want to get a deal. I am partially convinced that they want to break the union and they want this thing to end and they don't mind missing a whole season the same way they did in the NHL, the same way they almost did in the NFL, for them to just win forever and ever and not have to worry about this anymore. So there is a part of me, a big part, that says that's what they're trying to do. And that's one of a few reasons that ultimately I do blame the owners more than anybody else is not close. But I want to be also clear. I think the players have been misguided. I don't think they're callous and evil the way I think the owners have been, but I do think they've been misguided and that they have gone after some of the wrong benefits.
Pills to win.
And ones that win, while they may help some of them, and they've been, credit to them, more than any other time I can remember in any other labor negotiation, they have tried to put in things to help the people at the bottom, not just the ones at the top. Honestly, they have. It's one of the reasons I've been so supportive of their view. It is not just to help Justin Verlander and Max Scherzer and the guys at the top. It has been to help the rank and file. It has been to help the minor leaguers who get completely jobbed year after year. It has been to help the guys at the bottom who never make big, big money and have to make up the money that they didn't make in the minors when they're making 20 grand a year for a few years, riding buses, all of that, and trying to make sure that those guys don't get pushed around the way they have. I give them credit. They've done more for the rank and file than in any negotiation I can remember.
And in any sport over the last 10 years,
yes.
Really.
Oh, yeah. I don't mean just in baseball.
Maybe
I mean
the NBA has made a little bit in the same vein, but this one that the Major League Baseball Players
certainly more than they have in football, and like I think they've done a really good job of trying to help the guys in the rank and file. Where they haven't done as good a job, and this is important to me as a fan, to all of you, they haven't done as good a job of really trying to push for actual competitive balance, and that's disappointing as a fan. Brock, you know me. You know how important it is for me to see to see fairness, whether we're talking about college athletes or the NFL labor dispute or whatever. Fairness and the greedy owners, it always get like when there's a ton of money being made and the people who are the most talented aren't the ones making it, that bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, baseball's got a competitive balance problem and they are not doing a good enough job of trying to address that. The best way to do that is always, and I've said this forever, have a salary floor. Mm-hmm. Well, the players have never wanted a salary floor because they think it leads to a salary cap. And I guess I would argue that at this point, they'd be better off with a salary cap and negotiating a higher percentage like the NFL has done than doing what they're doing because they're losing out on all of the fronts at once.
So help me understand this, this luxury tax. Is that the players want more because they think that that grows the revenues and is going to allow more revenue to be in, more money to be in, more finance to be
in? It's a really good question you're asking, and I'm not entirely sure of the answer. There's a lot of different possibilities there.
Howdy was opening.
Howdy, sure. Well, the theory behind it is that there's enough people treat it as enough to percentage, like each team spending to percentage of that number. So, like, we want to be within 5% or 10%. There's a group of teams that are there. And there's a group of teams that are, we want to be at the salary cap. We're just barely passing the group of teams there. And that there's a group of teams at the bottom that say, we're going to be this percentage of that anyways. And that's how they design it. So when you raise the top, everyone's going to raise it because they're doing their finances based on a percentage of that, not just the flat finances. That's part of their operating principle, what they think is happening.
Yeah. So
the players are wanting to expand that. The players
so
are wanting to
So if you raise the
players,
top, players, everyone goes up.
The cap, the luxury tax number was last year $210 million. Okay, the owners are saying go to $220 million. The players are saying I think it's like $248 million or $238 million, something like that. Yep. Okay, last year the only team that exceeded the luxury tax threshold was the Dodgers.
Yep.
They spent $266 million. So they exceeded it by $56 million.
You're gonna go over it. You might as well get your money's worth.
Not even close. The Yankees were at 205, so they were close but under. The Mets were at 201, so they were under. The Astros, and they were the only two teams that were within $15 million of the cap or of the tax threshold. The Astros were at 194, Phillies 191, Red Sox 187, Angels 180, and it goes down from there. But only three teams, one was over and two were within $15 million. That was it. So you're not talking about a large portion of the teams. Howdy, you can talk about percentages, but if you were the Angels and you felt like, hey, we needed another player or two, you could have spent $15 million and still been $15 million away from the luxury tax threshold. So I don't think the tax was in any way an impediment to the Angels spending more. They just decided this is how much we can afford to spend this year.
We have Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout, and we already stink.
That's right.
What more are we going to do?
Well, so look at it and say, I don't think this tax threshold is affecting most of the teams. Maybe a few. Mm-hmm. Maybe the Yankees and Mets or one or two more might have gone over. But what? You're going to make this argument over five teams? In the meantime, the Orioles spent $42 million. The Indians, at the time, now the Guardians, spent $50 million. The Pirates spent $54 million. And that's like up for them. So, okay, and by there were one, two, three, four. There were four teams that spent less than 60, another that spent less than, that spent 70, and a whole bunch more that spent less than 90. So I don't know that it's clear that rate changing the
right
or giving in on the tax threshold would have been such a negative problem for the players. And if they were willing to give in, given that it was only benefiting a couple of teams, and that's where you get this theory out there. Do you know who Dejan Kovacevic is?
No.
He's a big Pittsburgh guy. He used to be the big Pirates beat writer for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Okay. And he was the first guy to kind of leave and go rogue like 7 or 8 years ago.
DK Sports?
DK Sports. Yeah. DK Pittsburgh Sports. And he's made an empire there. Mm-hmm. He's really good. He's a really smart, interesting guy. But his theory, and because he's following and trying to get on the Pirates for their cheap ownership and Bob Nutting, is the players are blowing this, that they should accept a cap, that they should accept get a floor, and that all of this is just to appease Scott Boras. That Boras is the one who wants no threshold, that wants that number to go up so he can continue for his top clients to play the Dodgers, Yankees, Mets, Astros, Phillies, Red Sox, Angels against each other, and that will essentially benefit him and his small band of clients, even though it does not help competitive balance, nor the majority of players in baseball. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. The problem is the players have also, I think, done some really great things. And that's where you get this idea of the bonus pool. I don't want to get into the details. I think we did before, but trying to help the pre-arbitration guys who are making roughly league minimum, but overperforming, right? This is when Aaron Judge hits 55 home runs and gets paid $550,000 for it. It's just silly. So they want to create a bonus pool where you give him a few extra million for his trouble. The difference between where the players are at and where the owners are at is $60 million. One wants 85, one wants 25. That's $2 million a team. Come on.
Yep.
You can't possibly tell me that in a sport bringing in billions, $60 million a year in a bonus pool for the lowest paid players who perform the best is something that is going... The owner should just give in. And how the player should give in on the luxury tax, figure it out on the major league minimum where they're only 25 grand apart, and let's play baseball.
Hey, Howdy, is there going to be some new revenue streams? Did I see your tweet?
Yeah. That's one of the hard things about trying to figure all this out is baseball's not losing any revenue streams, but yet they're going to add logo sales on jerseys. Gambling money's going to come in. Mm-hmm. They're going to have more streaming services come in. They'll have extra playoff games added. So all of these new revenue streams come in. The pandemic ends, so some of the gate stuff that they deal with,
which, by the way,
too.
And all that revenue, unlike the NFL, that gets split. It all goes into a pot, and the players get 50% or 49%.
It just goes to the owners.
Yep, just goes to the owners.
Yeah.
Just goes right to the owners.
Then we're not going to increase spending overall. Like that. That's a fundamental thing that just doesn't make any sense. Like if you would have told me on Monday night, whenever they had their 18-hour negotiation, that the end result was going to be we're going to have a cap that never increases for 3 years with
madness.
All that.
It just doesn't even make any sense.
It
is madness, but at the same time, I can understand if the players then never should have even agreed to 238. Like they shouldn't even be asking for 238.
No.
They should just say this is ridiculous. There's so much money coming in. We should have a cap. We should have a floor. We should share in this.
Yes.
Be partners the way the NFL is.
They got revenue share.
In a million years, I never thought that the NFL players would be trying to get a better deal than the Major League Baseball players. Yep. But honestly, you can make a legitimate argument that that's what's happening and then talk about the competitive balance. Because, and this is another point that I've heard elsewhere, I think is a very good one. Who went to the Super Bowl this year for the first time in forever?
2-4 seeds, first time ever.
All right, but not just that.
How about the Bengals?
Mike Brown, one of the cheapest
owners.
Well,
they've been to the Super Bowl, but won a Super Bowl.
Well, I said in forever. Forever.
Yeah, okay.
First time in forever.
And why haven't they been there forever? A lot of reasons. Mm-hmm. But one of them is that Mike Brown is a cheap guy, cheap owner. Always has been. What did he have to do in the last couple of years?
Spend.
Because he had to hit the floor, right?
Yep.
Well, what if the Pirates did that and went to the World Series? Wouldn't that be cool?
When they had Andrew McCutchen, what if that was like, you know, they built all this time up and then they had 3 years. At that time, they got to get to this number and add it around him.
What if the Reds did that? I mean, these are teams I can't fathom being in the World Series. I can't fathom it. But what if they did?
Did Mike Brown really spend, or he have his best players on rookie contracts?
But he had to spend a ton of money in free agency.
He brought in like 11 free agents.
He's got his quarterback on a rookie deal, and his wide receivers on rookie deals.
I understand that. I'm not saying that that's the only reason they got there. But the one of the difference, you're right, Joe Burrow is another major difference. But one big difference is that they spent a ton of money.
Yeah, I'm not arguing. I'm just trying not to
get up to the floor.
Too much credit.
Thank you. Yeah, let's not.
Yeah, well, let's be careful with that.
I'm not giving him credit at all.
I'm saying all the rules.
He had to spend to get to the floor. What if Bob Nutting had to spend to get to the floor in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I hear you.
What if the A's had to spend to get to the floor? I know it wouldn't be great for the Mariners, because if the A's actually spent and continued to make smart decisions, God, they'd be the best team in baseball.
You think the owners are aligned? We've heard a lot about breaking the union, about dissension among the players. Are the owners in Boston, New York, L.A. aligned with the owners in Cincinnati, in Kansas City, and Pittsburgh?
They seem to be.
Hmm.
And the problem is, those teams, even though they spend so much money, they're still not losing money sharing it with everybody else.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, and this is why I think the owners are the ones that I'm going to blame as much as I do, it's a callous desire to make money rather than to have the best league you can have and to have the fun of the sport of baseball. They just want money.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure winning is a priority for some of those teams at the top, but at the end of the day, it sure feels as if the priority is profit. And that's where it comes back, and I know we made a big deal out of it at the time, that Rob Manfred quote from a week or two ago saying that you can make more money putting your money in the stock market. And I can't get over that quote, because the answer to it is, good, go do that. Get away from this sport. Don't touch my sport.
Yep.
Go invest in Microsoft.
Well, I also wonder, alongside profit and greed, is how much of it is pride. We're baseball. We're not football. We're not going to do that. We're not going to follow any of their business plan. We're not going to put a cap together. I don't care that it's been great for them. I don't care what it's done to the sport. I don't care how it's grown the sport. I don't care.
Well, you think the players are saying that?
No, the owners.
Oh, the owners want that.
Yeah.
No, you're wrong. You're wrong. No, the owners want a cap.
The owners want a cap.
Badly. They even said, we'll take a floor. We'll put a floor in for
yes.
you.
Give the owners cap, have we'll been willing to put a cap in.
You think
a floor.
The owners would like the NFL model?
The owners, I don't know if they would argue the same percentages, and there's a lot of differences.
Correct.
No, the owners have said, we will put in a cap, and we will put in a floor if you give us a cap.
Yeah.
The owners would love a cap. That's been the holy grail for the owners, Brock.
Especially if it's not tied to revenue.
Yeah, I think I would disagree with you on that. I don't think it's that they say we're baseball, not football. I think they're jealous of their buddies who they go to their yacht clubs with, and the other guys are like, you don't have a cap.
Hey, easy on the yacht
How do you
clubs,
even do this? Okay.
Hey,
Larry was Commodore. The
Commodore. That's right.
Easy on the
Sorry,
yacht
did, I guess I was reading about how the oligarchs, the Russian yes. oligarchs, like one
these
of the
These aren't mega yachts, Mike.
They're trying to block them from their yachts. Did you see Good. That? And I saw someone, I forget who
Blockades
it was.
Blockades have been effective lately.
Molly Knight or somebody like that on Twitter was asking where you could go to become a yacht guard.
Yeah. Let's go. Give me a kayak. I'll be there. Get me out there.
Like a bazooka and a kayak.
Yeah.
You could ask, who's available to do it? All those people who hang out in McCovey Cove. There's That's no baseball. Right. Send them out to block the yachts Expertly instead of getting
those
fly balls.
Fast kayakers.
They're really
they're willing to get
it.
In the water.
Absolutely.
Okay, can we talk food? My heart hurt with the early confession. Okay, that hurt. My
Your
head's hurting.
Heart
hurt. Oh, so bad for you.
How did you make yourself a victim in this?
I'm sorry.
You are deceitful, conniving.
No, I'm sorry.
But you're the victim here. Oh, my
no,
God.
No, I'm not the victim. I'm not.
You said your heart hurt.
My heart hurt because I hurt you. I didn't like doing that.
So you're the victim.
You were feeling shame.
Yes, I'm Super feeling shame and guilt. And
you know what?
We make things better for Brock.
Hold on. The three of us are going to talk.
Have you thought about Brock?
Brock, we are going to talk about beefing up business meetings with Famous Dave's, and you don't get to come to our meeting with all the food. The famously sawsome catering.
Oh, yeah.
Is ideal when you want your meeting or event to be delicious, memorable, and stress-free, or if you have one member of your group that you want to exclude. Customize for delivery, pickup, or full service. The Famous Q is designed to allow you to kick back and crush a little classic Q, whether you're diving into a brief or digging into a brisket or banishing your friend. Just think about going whole hog on some St. Louis-style spare ribs, cornbread muffins, Georgia chopped pork, all while nodding agreeably as Brock once did at a PowerPoint presentation. That's the dream. From their smoking starters and fresh salads to barbecue bundles and feasts, Famous Dave's Slow Cook Goodness is there to add a little flavor to your work schedule in the middle of a work day. How about that?
Sign
You're going to go to a meeting and instead just throw in a little Famous Dave's.
You know what? This is a taste of Texas because this is what we used to do when I lived in
Texas.
Is
that true?
Business meetings, catering,
what?
Barbecue every time.
That
happens?
Always.
That
yep.
sounds
catering
so
catering barbecue.
Good. Get all the details. FamousDaves.com. Well, Brock, this is your time of year, right? I mean, you got Underwear Olympics going on, body show, watching the guys get measured. This is your time with the combine. I would say the combine is the thing that, like, the biggest discrepancy between us in terms of how much one of us likes it versus the other.
But you've grown. It's kind of like our relationship. I was a zero in cynicism. You were 100. And then we've kind of come together a little bit. Like, you'll sneak attack. Don't act like you.
Those calves. Mm. Those hips.
Stewart Body Show.
you've been prone to watch the Virginia Tech linebacker, vertical 38.
Was that guy's name like Junior or something? Or he had a weird name.
You kind of were watching Oboom Guachum. You went back and
watched
it.
Yeah, that's me. No, I'll tune in just to
dabble.
Humor you, but like
and to
the
be
amount
fair,
you love it is out
to
of control.
To be fair, 13 years ago when we started doing it every day, I was taking notes. I was watching every hour. I DVR'd the whole thing. I'm not that psycho anymore.
Okay.
So I'm not to that extent and to that level.
Well, it's your time. This is
but
your
I do
big
enjoy
moment.
It.
Obi Mellon Fonwu.
Who?
Was that the guy we love? He was Connecticut.
UConn, yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, I do
Obi Mellon Fonwu.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about him?
I thought that was the name you were trying to...
No, this was a guy from Virginia who the Seahawks ended up actually bringing in a few years later.
Wasn't it Rock Junior? There was a... Yeah, there was a junior.
I don't know, he jumped
He jumped 38
gym.
And a half. He's
it was pretty crazy. The Seahawks brought him in. He couldn't play. That wasn't really a... His weakness was football. But other than that, he had some really, really impressive physical skills. So I did put together my annual, Brock, my annual off-season storyline column, which is up at 710sports.com if you guys are have a few extra minutes and want to see it. I think they're pretty easy, but I know you put together a few as well. You didn't write it out, but that's fine.
I did. Well, I wrote it on my yellow pad right in front of me right here. I didn't put it into an article.
The same thing. You could just take a picture and post it, and you know, basically we can have dueling columns. But why don't you start? Why don't you kind of tell me where you're at in terms of these off-season storylines?
From 5 to 1. 5 for me, sooner rather than later, could be done now. We could have a report today, but between taping and releasing. Dwayne Brown, Quandre Diggs, got to get done. You got to sign those two guys. Those are essential. They are kind of nearing the vein of Cam and KJ and Sherm, and these are your guys. These are your veteran guys that are difference makers that still play at a high level. They were Pro Bowlers. They both got to get done. You've got to take care of your own. That has been the essence of this program. You reward those guys. You broker goodwill in the locker room, on the field. Those two have got to get done, and that can get done now. It does not have to wait for the new league year to begin. Get Dwayne and get Diggs signed, sealed, delivered.
So let me ask you on that one, because I think these are important. I don't have that on my list. They're sort of caught up in one of mine about sort of the specifics of free agency. But on each of those, I do have a question. On Quandre Diggs, can you afford to spend that much money at the safety position?
Yes. Yes. That cap is going up. Safeties are important. He's a ball hawk. He comes down. He hits people. You want to, in this scheme, be able to disguise. You want to be able to cover. You want to be able to do the things that you want to do on the back end with Desai and Carl Scott. You need a cerebral, high-level, high football acumen safety. And if that means after this season Jamal Adams doesn't fit, he doesn't fit. And you want to cut down the cost of your safeties, then you eliminate that huge chunk of it. I think Diggs is a much more important fit, much more important piece than even a Jamal Adams.
Well, and I you know how much I like safeties, but if you're going to spend that much money at the safety position, I better not hear that you don't have enough for the whatever you need at the actual important positions like defensive end, defensive tackle, and quarterback. So
agreed.
I'm fine with the re-signing of Quandre Diggs, who I like a lot. Who doesn't? Everybody likes Quandre Diggs.
Yep.
But I better not hear that you don't have the money to do something else.
I think that's fair.
I better not hear that.
But I also cannot let what we have done in the past and how much you are paying Jamal Adams get in the way of this player. He should not have to falter. He should not have to take a discount. He should not have to be like, wow, we can't pay these safeties this much. Look how much we got tied up in our two safeties. I cannot let the downside of that deal affect the upside possibilities of this one.
Okay. So fine. And then on Dwayne Brown, well, I agree you need to have a left tackle, and Dwayne's done a good job. Is he the best option at a very important position that you can go get, or can you upgrade?
I don't think there's an upgrade out there on the market. I don't think there's one that's got the goodwill, the leadership, the qualities that he's going to bring as well. Andrew Whitworth has shown you can play that position into your 40s. I don't think there's a better option on the market, and I'd rather have him, bird in hand.
Good. All right. I'm sold on, by the way. Like, I'm asking questions. It's not because
Taron Armstead,
back.
Who have you talked about?
Well, Taron Armstead, yeah, Orlando Brown. Orlando, he's not going to be a free agent, though. I was told very specifically by my guy Carrington Harrison and
back off.
Yeah, he's like, he's just not a free agent. They won't let him get there. They'll franchise him. They will not let him get to free agency. He is part of their plan in Kansas City, so just give that one up. Taron Armstead, maybe. I mean, like, he's going to get some really big money wherever he ends up, whether it's in New Orleans or somewhere else. Is that a big enough upgrade to make it worth it?
Not for me.
Yep.
Not for me. Come in, have to learn a new scheme, learn new personnel, learn new people. And I actually like the bark that Dwayne has. He's the one that will bark back at Russell when nobody else will.
He seemed mad all year.
He was kind of feisty.
He seemed just kind of mad. All right, that's number 5. What's number 4?
Number 4 on my list is draft production and impact, not potential. And I had Oboom Gwachum on my mind. Not because of the combine, but because of so much of these just attributes. Oh, I love these attributes. Love this physical skill. Oh, I love the potential. Potential is a coach killer and has been for coaches on these staffs, on the offensive line and your defensive coordinator in particular. I don't need potential. I need guys that can play football. I need guys that don't just jump 39 inches. I need production. That's the thing about that draft with the Ravens a couple years ago when the Ravens and Seahawks were just mirrored like back to back on nearly every pick and nearly every round. Mm. And I love J.K. Dobbins and I loved the defensive lineman from A&M whose name is escaping me right now.
Gallimore?
Nope. He was from Oklahoma, Neville Gallimore. Mazarike. I like those guys. There's production and they've been more productive than some of your pieces. Patrick Queen, Jordan Brooks, those two are going to be tied at the hip, back to back picks. You know, Jordan, I think Patrick got out to a sprint ahead of him. Jordan's caught up to him. Maybe a better player than him in the long term. I want production and I want impact. In Russell Wilson's final 2 years at this stage of the game with Pete Carroll, this is not a time to get cute. This is not a time to get potential. This is not a time to have upside. I want impact in this draft
class.
It's funny.
This is where you and I differed a little bit. I don't think I had the draft anywhere in my top five storylines. And not that the draft isn't a big deal, but without the first round pick and the fact that they've lost out on the number 10 pick, it's just so, I think it was just almost too painful to write about. I just couldn't put it in there. Like, and that's not to say that the draft's not important. I agree with every single thing you just said, but it didn't crack my top five. So go ahead. That's number four.
Number three is maximize and cultivate that aggressive package defensively. You have to spend significant time this offseason blending Desai, blending Carl Scott, blending the new mouth of the South, Clinton Hurt. You've got to blend those three guys together, and they've got to have time on task. This is, you know, we always say this, and I listen to all sorts of sports radio stations around the country. Oh, this is the biggest offseason in the history of the franchise. Oh, this is the biggest draft in the history of the franchise. Oh, this is, well, you know what this is? This is the biggest time on task of the offseason in a long, long time, especially defensively. A first-time D coordinator, two young assistants, new scheme, new style, new aggression. Yeah. They have got to have, offseason-wise, Mike, time on task together, and that's just not on the whiteboard and in the meeting rooms, which is awesome, and Pete's super excited about it, and I'm sure you're going to hear about it at the combine.
Well, we did a little today. Bit. I mean, Pete said we've been arrogant in the past, and we've sort of needed to make some real changes to the
and
to
that ends
system.
Now.
Yeah, yep. So I think he seems to recognize that. So yes, all
he
right.
He said he'd been itching to make changes for a while, but yes, didn't,
right.
Which was okay. Curious. But.
All right.
Well, I think I can understand that. I mean, at least I can write.
So you think
a
like he was respect for Ken Norton, or well, I don't want to step on your toes and Bigfoot you.
I would. I think this is me thinking a little bit. Let me write you a script, as you know, I like to. I'm the head coach. I want to make changes. I don't have the right people to implement those changes. And until I'm able to make the move, and I'm going to try it with them, but when it doesn't work, I'm going to need to kind of step in and pull back and
do
say,
what hey, we know.
We got to do what we know until we have the right people. And the belief being that now you have the right people. And I say that without trying to throw.
I'll read that script.
Yeah, I think that's the most likely.
Yep.
So, all right, number two, bro.
Let Waldron cook. Let Shane Waldron cook. And I think we started to see that at the end of the season for numerous different reasons. And that equally means those dudes have to be out there working. That means you, Russell Wilson. I don't need you in San Diego on your logoed field. I don't need that. With DK, I don't need you with your shoulder pads and helmet on Instagram. I don't need that. I need you in Seattle alongside your coordinator and let him cook. He's got now his offensive line coach that he is hip to hip with that they brought in a year ago. Speaking of changes, right, and everything else, you bring in the younger O-line coach to work with Solari. You give him that year. You let Solari have a nice exit, and here you go. Here's Dickerson, right aligned with Waldron, right aligned with Russell Wilson, and those guys need to cook. Not Russell Wilson cook, Shane Waldron cook, and those ingredients have to be on the field working this offseason.
And number one?
Go big or go home. You need impact players. Much like that draft, go big or go home. In fact, if there's some players that fall to you and in the second round or whatever that you love, spend your money in free agency, spend some significant money in free agency to get impact players. And if it means, you know what, trading the following year's second or first round pick because somebody is falling late in that first round that you love, that you have targeted, that you think is a top 15 player, trade your second, trade next year's first, and go get that impact player if you believe that corner can come in and start day one. If you believe that edge rusher in a deep class has fallen down and could come in and start day one. You believe an offensive tackle that you have as one of the 10 best players in this draft and he's sitting at 17 or 15 or whatever, then you go get that impact player. You go big or you go home. It is that window, I think, of opportunity for your quarterback and your staff to go get it done now.
It's interesting. You and I actually went in a lot of different directions in this in terms of just to show us how many potential offseason storylines you have with the Seahawks. That was my number two, my version. How serious are they about winning ASAP, right? Because that's really what that means. Sacrificing some of your future, right? Pushing the cap down the line, etc., in order to make sure you go big right now and maximize these last couple of years of Russell Wilson. My number one was still, what's Russell Wilson's future? And I know that the odds are 99% that it's going to be here in Seattle, but the rumors are still interesting because of where they come from and why they come. And the fact that the Seahawks choose not to deal Russell, that in and of itself is an interesting and important offseason storyline because it leads to what you just said, right? Winning ASAP and going big or going home. You're doing that because of Russell Wilson's immediate future, that you only have a couple of years potentially before this deal runs out and if he doesn't want to resign. So that I think that's actually incredibly important, and those two are very much linked together. My number three was a bigger picture version of your number five. Which free agents return, and how can you drastically alter this roster, improve it through free agency? This is really the specifics, right? Quandre Diggs, Dwayne Brown, DJ Reed, Gerald Everett, all those guys. Like, who's in, who's out? And then which guys from the outside? Do you like Chandler Jones?
Yep.
Do you like Harold Landry?
Whoa, a BC linebacker?
I know, I was wrong. Do you like Harold? I know, I was wrong.
College pass rusher?
I know, I was
What's
wrong.
Wrong with
I
you?
Was wrong. Do you like Harold Landry?
I like him. I don't think I love him.
Do you like Jadeveon Clowney?
Yeah, 30% snaps.
Okay. I'm just trying to figure out, like, how are you going to get some impact rushing the passer? There's only so many options out there to really impact the quarterback. If it's not Chandler Jones, who's it going to be? Right? I mean, those are a few of the only real options out there. So I think that conversation, improving the offensive line, disruptive interior tackle, maybe it's Akeem Hicks, his name has come up. So, yeah, I think that's number three for me. You didn't even mention number four. And I know because you're scared. Brock.
Is it Jamal?
No.
Oh, good.
It's worse.
What?
What do you do with Bobby Wagner?
Oh,
Bobby Wagner. You have to whisper.
Why are we whispering?
Because it's embarrassing to talk about.
You don't want to have the parents hear you.
Nobody
talk
wants
it.
To talk about this. It's uncomfortable, but it's still important. What are you going to do with Bobby? You got three choices, right? Pay him his money and allow him to continue to do what he's doing.
And what is that at next year? 18?
18, something like that. Uh-huh. You can renegotiate, drop his playing time, drop his salary, or you can let him go. And so that decision is going to need to be made. It's hard because of the leadership skills. He's a pillar in the community. Great guy. That's why we're whispering. But that is a huge offseason storyline that's going to have to get resolved somehow.
Who makes that call? You think Pete makes that call to his agent?
I don't know, man.
And when he
I
makes would, that call, do you think
to his
he
agent,
whispers?
You mean to him?
Yeah. Do you think he whispers? Hey, Bobby.
I don't think so. And I wouldn't either. If I were Pete Carroll and I had to make that call, or John, I don't know who. It's probably John who makes it, but it could be either one. I'm looking that man straight in the eye. Yep. And telling him, I have the utmost respect for you, but this is what's in the best interest of the team. I can't wait to welcome you into the Ring of Honor. I can't wait till you're in the Hall of Fame. This is what we need to do right now in the best interest of the Seahawks. Good luck.
I think the best interest, too, and I don't know if Bobby would ever do this, I think the best interest would be to redo that deal, to bring that number down, and to provide some incentives. And I think if I'm Bobby, like, I'm all pro, I'm Pro Bowl. Okay, what incentives do you want? Yep, we can include those. You know,
I don't know whether I want incentives. Maybe it's for impact plays
or
something. But
yes.
I think the issue there is I don't want Bobby playing as many snaps as he's been playing. I want him to have more impact in fewer snaps. Does that make sense?
It does. I don't know if that is how a middle linebacker feels.
I understand.
I don't know if
that.
You come in, yeah, you play, you know, the third series, or you know, you come in and this, or you're going to be the backup. I don't think there's any realm that he views himself at this stage, nor does probably the rest of the league view him as a backup. Mm-hmm. The market would be, I think, pretty good for him, but that will be, yeah, you're right. That's one that maybe I didn't want to talk about because
you're scared. It's fine. And then the last one for me was, what can you learn from the league? Because of the whole copycat league thing and the Rams and the bank, like, what can you learn from the league without copying them?
Yep.
And so, I mean, we can get deep into that if you want, but like, what can you take from the Rams? What can you learn from the Bengals? Don't become them, but try to figure out what you can learn from it and how the league is changing and adapt mm-hmm. without becoming a copycat and finding a way to lead rather than follow.
So. Yeah, and is this truly the methodology? Is this truly where the data and the science, Mike, is pointing that these draft picks don't matter, that the Rams don't have one for three more years in the first round, that it doesn't matter, that it's such a crapshoot in this draft, and because you hit early time and again in your first few drafts, don't be fooled because you've come up on the craps table the last 7-8 years and seen, oh, that's right. Yeah, we were just, whew, we were the outlier compared to the rest of the league. And maybe these draft picks and the draft capital isn't as valuable, or on the other side of it, let the rest of the league think that way and that we need to capture that opportunity. And in this draft, continue to be young and continue to be hungry. And now that we got better coaches defensively that we can develop and grow these guys, continue to grow them. So you're right. Even that can be a dangerous game.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, Brock, we'll finish up here with a little Blue 88. And I know you had some, I had some football questions for you. And I know you wanted to talk a little bit more combine than I gave you the opportunity to earlier. It's your big moment. Mm-hmm. So what should a Seahawks, or any Seahawks fan who knows you're not getting a top 10 pick, not a first round pick, but they do have a bunch of later picks in this draft, what should they be watching at the combine this week?
I think here is where my curiosity, this is our first time, right? We've heard from Pete and John. They were on the podium at the combine on this Wednesday, getting a chance to talk a little bit. And Pete talked about, you know, just some of the, what do you say, arrogance, right? Just some of the beliefs that they've had. And one of those for many, many years was that corners have to be X, right? They have to be XY. Like I was working with Titus on his math test, the XY axis. They have to be X tall. They have to be Y long. They have to have these kind of arms. And all of a sudden, DJ Reed and Sydney and others have shown, no, you don't. And this league has shown, no, you don't. No, you have to have guys that can play the ball. You have to have incredible quickness. You have to have awareness. You have to have route recognition. You have to be a processor. You have to have a lot of other attributes and more than just long arms. And if you eliminate a ton of these guys because they don't have those specs, there is a level of arrogance to it. So I think for Seahawks fans to watch this combine in particular with the nickelbacks, with the corners, with the coverage guys, because you're going to have implemented some new scheme on the back end. Right, some new eyes, some new beliefs, some new thoughts with Desai and with Carl Scott. So I will be curious. I will be watching that position group, I think, a little bit more so than in the past. It's top heavy. There's some elite guys at the very top. But as I said to you last segment, man, in my storylines, go big or go home. If there's a corner that they love, that they think could come in and start day number one, and all of a sudden he's sitting there in the teens, the early 20s, you got to go get them. So I'm going to be watching those corners and those nickelbacks and, yeah, maybe even the coverage safeties more than I have before.
All right, question number two. Always like checking in on what's going on in the desert with my friends at the with the Cardinals. And so they've had quite the interesting little start to the offseason. I would have fired Cliff Kingsbury after the season. I want to stay. I've said that before. I'll say it again. I would have fired Cliff Kingsbury, not just because I don't think he's a great coach, but because I got to find out what I'm doing with Kyler Murray. And I got to find out whether their collapse the last couple of years is because of the coach or the quarterback. Mm-hmm. So I'm probably going to fire the coach, bring in another, and see what he's like for the year with Kyler before making a decision. They don't do that. Instead, after all the big mess with Kyler Murray wanting more money and the scrubbing of social media and his big agent statement with all the fine print, they decide to extend both Steve Keim, their GM, and Cliff Kingsbury until 2027. Why? What are they doing down there?
Well, I think the owner has decided, he has to make that calculation that, you know what, I'd rather have those two and move it forward with those two than I would paying this QB $40 to $45 million a year. They still, you know, they don't have to, right? He just finished year three. They have a fifth-year option on him, let alone his fourth year. Some have been paid after three. Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen have been paid after 3 years. Kyler thinks he's in that camp. I don't. They think he's more in the Lamar and Baker Mayfield camp, which I do as well. You're still in prove-it mode. Yeah, you took the team to the playoffs this year, and you absolutely fell flat on your face. And you played terrible down the stretch of the season, Kyler. So I'm sorry. We're not going to pay you $45 million a year. And I'll tell you what else, Mike. I think this is from an ownership side, right, wrong, and different. And you can make fun of Bidwell if you'd like.
I usually do, yes.
Yes, and you usually do. I think this is also a continuity matters. And you know what? John Lynch and Shanahan work well together. And those two guys up in the Northwest work well together. And Kime and Cliff work well together.
Isn't Kime supposed to be like a pretty lousy person? Doesn't he have a bunch of problems?
He's had, you know, he had a DUI. He had some off the field things that I think he owned too and took responsibility for and got treatment for. I think he's a pretty good evaluator, man. He's done a pretty good job in the draft.
He has.
Yeah, getting some pretty darn good players. And this is, these two can work together. And we have seen in the league when they don't, how that blows things up, when there isn't trust and there isn't equity between them. And if those two trust each other and want to move the ball forward together and are on the same page, frankly, with the quarterback's got to grow up. Kyle's got to grow up. He got a lot of baseball in him. Right, he's got a lot of baseball player to him. That is his background. He was a top 10 pick. He's an uber talented guy. I said it a couple years ago, got yelled at by the Arizona organization for doing so. I didn't say that on a whim. I didn't say that without any sources. He's got some growing up, some maturing to do. And the owner said, I like the relationship between coach and GM, and either they're going to grow him up or I'm going to trust those guys to make the next decision with the next quarterback.
All right, last question for you. Question number three. Where's Aaron Rodgers end up other than, like, you know, hanging out with his Buddhist friends?
And his cleanses, getting rid of his cleanses,
how
too?
Where's that Buddhist friends?
Tantra Karma.
Well, that's weird, too. But the one about, like, the guys came to visit me from the coaching staff, and I made them wait outside my house on the street because I was hanging out with my Buddhist friends. What a weird thing to say.
Yeah. I think he ends up in Green Bay. I think when the dust all settles here, I think he realizes what he has. I don't think you want to go to the AFC at this stage of your career and fight with Mahomes and Herbert and Allen and Lamar Jackson and what's coming in the AFC. I think the NFC is weaker. I think that division is weaker. I think he owns it. I think he likes some of the isolation and some of the independence that he has in Green Bay. And I just, my gut says they're going to pay him and pay him a ton of dough and make him very, very highly compensated. And what that's going to do here is it's only going to fan the flames of all of these other teams, right? The Denver Broncos in particular, or the 49ers, well, they've drafted Trey Lance. Some of these other teams that are still searching and desiring, the New York Giants that want their franchise quarterback, I think it's just going to fan the flames of all of this Russell Wilson talk through the entirety of this offseason once
Aaron's
deal gets done there.
Does it lead to anything?
I don't think so, man. I just, you know, as I've been pretty consistent in this, I just don't think you get a haul back at this stage of the game with where Pete and this organization and this team is that allows you to compete for a Super Bowl. Right? If that is still the end goal, which I believe it is, and I know it is for John Schneider and Pete Carroll, is to get back and win another Super Bowl, that losing number three, I just don't see a replacement. I don't see a haul. I don't see somebody in the next 2 years that walks into that role and gives you a better opportunity than he does to get back to lift the Lombardi Trophy.
Well, there you go. That is Blue 88, and that was a lot of fun. That was a good day today. I think we got through a lot. It's such a bummer, and I'm glad we were at least able to have a little bit of fun today because I'm just so crushed by the baseball thing. So,
correct.
Thank you for putting a smile on my face today. I appreciate that.
Well, and seriously, I am sorry.
As you should be.
I am sorry that I cheated on you. I'm sorry that I hurt you. I'm serious. I'm not just saying I'm sorry because, well, if you felt sorry or if you felt like I needed... No, I'm genuinely sorry that I cheated.
I believe you. All right. Well, we will do this again next week. We'll see where we're at with baseball. We'll see what's happened after the combine. We'll be a week closer to free agency. There'll be a lot to get to, I'm very sure. Howdy, have a good week as well.
I'll try my best.
Thank you. Brock, goodbye. We'll do it again next week. The hay.
Barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!